This episode of Risen Motherhood is brought to you in part by Crossway, publisher of Bread of Life, savoring the all-satisfying goodness of Jesus through the art of bread making by Abigail Dodds. This book is filled with 11 devotionals, along with 11 easy-to-follow bread recipes, all designed to show you how to find your ultimate fulfillment in Christ, the all-satisfying bread of life. Pick up Bread of Life wherever books are sold or visit crossway.org/plus to find out how you can get 30% off with your Crossway Plus account. We're so thankful for Crossway sponsorship.
Motherhood is hard. One second, we think we're doing a good enough job, and the next, we feel like the worst mom on the planet, which is why we need the refreshing truth of the gospel to be repeated over and over, giving us hope in the everyday moments. So, Mama, whether you're sipping cold coffee or doing a sink full of dishes, we hope you find truth, encouragement, and laughter here. This is the Risen Motherhood Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Hey, friends. Laura Wiffler here, and welcome to another episode of Risen Motherhood. My sister-in-law, Emily, will be joining me in a couple minutes. But first, I just wanted to tell you guys a little bit about the show that you're going to be listening to next. So this is kind of a unique one. It's actually a live show that we gave at the Gospel Coalition's Women's Conference last June in 2021. And this talk was really what kind of started us down the path of wanting to do a whole mini series on it, the series that you're listening to right now, because originally when we were thinking through this content, we thought, well, we really want to talk about what it's like to be a mom in the digital age and what has changed in motherhood because of all of us having these online presences. So this talk is about influencers and what it means to have influence, what it means to receive influence. And I hope you find it really interesting. It was really, really fun to talk about and to think about. You are going to hear us kind of jump in the middle because this is a live show. We ended up cutting out a couple of things in the beginning. So you're going to just hear it jump right in. So bear with us there. And the next thing I wanted to note, this is kind of silly, but as Emily and I listened back, we realized that we noted that Angelina Jolie and J-Lo are influencers that our moms might have looked up to in motherhood. And then we realized when we were talking later, they didn't really have children until way later after kind of our moms would have had children. And so just bear with us as we kind of made that note. That was a little faux pas on our part. But there are plenty of other kind of A-lister stars and celebrities that we know that our moms ended up looking up to. But that was kind of one of those things where we were just like, oh, who's about their age? And then those are the people that came to mind. But we recognize that they might not be the best examples. So, just a quick reminder that if you have not downloaded the Wake Up Workbook yet, it is an inventory about your social media use where you can think more deeply about these topics. I encourage you to sign up for our email list over on risenmotherhood.com/newsletter. And that's where you can sign up, get access to the Vault, a place where we keep all of our free downloads for you guys in one spot so you can find them all real easy. And you can download that workbook. And we do have questions that go along with today's show to help you think more critically about this topic and all the other topics that we've been talking about. So check that out. Again, risenmotherhood.com/newsletter. Okay, let's get to the show. So the first question I have for you guys is, please raise your hand if you have ever felt guilt in motherhood. Okay, literally every hand in the room, and it better
just
be
get up. Comfortable on
yeah,
this.
Yeah, get comfortable with your hands up. Okay, raise your hand if you've ever felt like you failed your kids. Yep, every hand. Okay, if you've ever wondered where the past 24 hours went, and you are just shocked. Okay, I saw so many hands already raised. I love that. Okay, we'll just do it. Where did the past 24 hours go? We'll do that. I love it. Okay. Okay. So another one is raise your hand if motherhood is completely different than what you pictured. Okay, so the last couple questions, you don't have to raise your hand on, but I just want you to think about this because it's going to tie into what we're talking about today, motherhood in a digital age or media age. I can't remember what we titled it, but something about media and digital. So the last couple questions, do you fall asleep looking at social media? You don't raise your hand. Do you wake up looking at social media? And then we want you to think specifically about the moms that you follow on social media. So you probably follow a lot of people, friends, family, but think about the moms and the ones that you're kind of getting your information from. What does her motherhood look like? What kind of mom would you say that she is?
So just hold on to your answers from that quiz for a little bit because we're going to come back to it later. But as Laura said, we really wanted to talk about motherhood in a digital age, because whether or not we realize it, all of the things that are happening on social media, kind of the new age of mom influencers, micro celebrities, all of that is affecting our motherhood. And so we are just going to take some time today to look at the history of mom influencers. We're going to talk a little bit about where that came from. Laura's just got some great research
and
history
research
pulled together. So we're going to look at that. And then we're going to examine maybe some of the good things that this mom influencer culture is bringing to our lives, some of the bad things and some of the things that aren't that helpful. And of course, like we typically do, we want to bring in the hope of the gospel and really ask, is influence a bad thing? Is it a good thing? Why or why not? And we have some applications and some things we've been talking about as we've been trying to navigate this culture. And I think before we get too deep, we want to say, like, Risen Motherhood seeks to be a mom influencer in so many ways, right? Like, we're online, we're sharing posts. We hope that when somebody's in the checkout line or they are picking up their child from school and they're scrolling on their phone or they're up in the middle of the night nursing, that what they're running across is hope. And it's something that's going to point them to eternal truth. So obviously, even though we're going to be breaking down the mom influencer culture, we just want you to know that we do think that it could be used for good.
And we recognize that we're like talking about ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay, so we want to go back and do a little bit of history for you guys. And so we're going to start with a day that some of you may not remember, but right when the internet started. And shockingly, it is weird because Emily and I are like old enough now that I feel like we have history that the youngest of moms do not have, which is weird. But it's interesting to look back at our lives and the moms that our mothers would look at. It was really, the moms who were influencing motherhood were really just a subset of like maybe 50 celebrities, if you think about it. So our moms were looking at people like, I don't know, Angelina Jolie or Jennifer Lopez, who else? Princess Diana, right? There was like very few, and you saw very little glimpses of their motherhood. So what they showed you was what they wanted to show you, and it was teeny tiny bits, but they were influencing the motherhood culture. But then as time went on to the age of the internet, and this is kind of whenever Emily and I started reading blogs and stuff, mommy bloggers had the big heyday, right? And so there were these long form articles with maybe a picture or two where moms were finally starting to open up. So now it wasn't the celebrities who were showing this little slice. They were telling it all. It was really raw. It was really vulnerable. They were talking about PPD, or they were talking about what postpartum,
telling
your body
their
looks
birth
like
stories in really big detail,
very
or sharing
detailed
methods for parenting.
Yeah. Usually pretty humorous, but moms were super grateful that people were talking about things that they had never talked about before in mom culture. And so there was like this breath of fresh air. But then in 2010, and this is when Emily and I both actually started blogging. I don't know if everybody knows it, but we used to blog pre-Risen Motherhood. But in 2010, that's when picturesque, like this beautiful motherhood, this beautiful picture of motherhood entered. And I don't know what it is, but I was reading about like the science of the internet, and something allowed the internet, someone improved the internet to where you could have like more pictures.
Yeah, and that was kind of around the time like Instagram came up, and we were like, oh, we can alter the
Instagram
photos of our
2010
kids to look really cute and fuzzy. Remember the ones that were kind of
like
fuzzy?
Like the glow and the white nurseries. And motherhood was like, we're authentic, but we're beautiful and perfect. And so that has been 2010 all the way to about the past couple of years, where there's almost been like this divide. And I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but essentially there's this still this picturesque, beautiful version of motherhood that you can find in a lot of feeds, where it's got five kids lined up in a row in front of the garage, you know, and they're all wearing matching outfits, everyone's smiling, and you're like, how on earth? But it's like you just scroll and their kids are perfect every single picture. And so there's that side where you have these perfect moms, and then you have kind of this other side that's developed because I think consumer demand has asked for it, where we've returned to our roots of that authentic, raw motherhood. I mean, I scrolled through one day and you can watch, I can't even believe this, you can watch a live birth on Instagram, like literally on Instagram Live, having birth. And it's just, you know, you just need to be prepared for that. And so I think that it's amazing now because some moms are offering kind of both this authenticity and this perfection. And there are these two sides where these moms at the top, they've really done a great job. They've started to monetize their motherhood. And they become, they look like they're a mom, and they look like they're kind of doing it out of their kitchen, and they might be, but
you can't tell that they have a whole team of people behind them, right? They've got the nanny and they've got someone helping with cleaning their home and they have
professional photographers, professional photo
PR
shoots,
consultants.
PR people.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're professional moms.
Yeah. They're running multi-million dollar businesses out of their motherhood. So they're it might look like just motherhood, but they're being professional moms. And that's the side that we don't see or we don't recognize. And now these women have brand partnerships. They're doing product development. I mean, they develop like hair ties and it feels a little bit like, you know, if I buy this hair tie, I'm going to be a really good mom like them. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting is that let's back up. Some of you guys right now have people that you follow that are coming to mind immediately. You're like, oh, I know who this is. And maybe they have millions of followers or hundreds of thousands of followers. But even if you don't, you may not realize you're still influenced by what that top tier of moms are doing. And Laura and I, as we were talking about this, this scene came to mind from the movie The Devil Wears Prada. I don't know if you guys have seen that. But essentially, they're getting ready to illustrate, and we'll say it in a minute, but like how it is that these top mom influencers are actually the ones determining what you would see on the shelf at Target. Or what's trending on Etsy, or what kind of pacifier is popular right now, what kind of swaddle is, and not just that, but also beliefs and practices. So anyways, Devil Wears Prada.
So the Devil Wears Prada, we were both like, oh my word, this is the Devil Wears Prada, because there's this great scene, and if you go home and watch it, if you haven't seen it yet, because it's just a great movie, but Anne Hathaway is this like new intern or new employee working for Meryl Streep, who is the Vogue lead editor. I think that's right. And Anne Hathaway is like scoffing because they're deciding between these two belts and they look identical. I mean, they look identical to me. And she's just kind of like, why are you laboring over this decision? This is ridiculous. And she's wearing this kind of frumpy blue sweater because if you know Anne's role in this, she's kind of like not fashionable at all and is now working at this high-end fashion magazine. And so I'm going to jump in kind of halfway through because Meryl Streep is noticing that she's kind of scoffing at this. And she just says to her, like, you think this has nothing to do with you. This has everything to do with you. And so the sweater is not just blue. And Meryl Streep goes, and then cerulean, so not a blue sweater, cerulean blue, quickly showed up in the collections of 8 different fashion designers. It filtered down through the department stores and it trickled on down to some tragic casual corner where you, no doubt, fished it out of some clearance bin. However, that blue represents millions of dollars and countless jobs. And so it's sort of comical how you think you've made a choice that exempts you from the fashion industry when, in fact, you're wearing the sweater that was selected for you by the very people in this room from a pile of stuff.
Yeah, so we just really felt like that illustrated what's going on when we are shopping on Amazon, shopping on Target, and we think, oh, I'm not influenced by them. I'm making my own choice, when really a lot of this has a tremendous trickle-down effect. Laura and I were reminiscing about when we had our first child, that like baby-led weaning was this big conversation.
Does anyone remember
happening.
That?
And we felt like, yeah, like this is something we came up with. But if we really traced it back, it was making the rounds on Pinterest. This was something that was really big on blogs. And I was like, I don't think I've heard anybody talk about that in a few
like,
years.
I don't think young moms, they're into baby-led weaning.
I don't know.
But that
we
was
don't
like
know
all the
into.
Rage when we were, you know, with our newborns and young kids.
And actually, in the last year, an illustration of this is the Always Pan. I don't know if you guys bought that, but I bet if you were on social media, all of you saw that come up on your newsfeed. It's like that really pretty one-color ceramic pan.
I mean, I
that
feel
does
that I
everything.
Need it. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Did you get one?
I didn't get it, but I want one. I've been influenced.
Yeah, so that would be one example. They took their pan straight to the influencers. So just kind of bypassed, you know, traditional advertising. And it was everywhere. And it sold like crazy. So some other things you might be doing as a mom in the last year. Are you baking bread? Are you using a baby wrap? Do you use a brown natural pacifier? Do you send farm girl flowers? Do you like to receive farm girl flowers? No. Do you want to wear a dress with white tennis shoes while you're momming? Do you like all white bedding? I had all white bedding once before a toddler came
currently.
And hung out on my bedding, and then it's not all white anymore. Do you put vitamin C on your skin? Have you ever considered buying a rug from Ruggable?
They are everywhere. Everywhere.
If they actually work, I want one.
I know. If anyone's tried those, you tell us, because they say that you can wash them, and they do look amazing.
Okay. This is a little bit more serious. In the last year, have you thought more about race or politics? Or vaccines? If you have, done any of those things, you have absolutely been influenced by mom influencer culture.
Yeah, I think the thing is we may not be following the 1 million follower count influencer, but a lot of us are following people with 3,000, 10,000, even, you know, 400 or 500, whatever it might be, but those things are trickling down. And I think in this day and age, this is something Emily and I have been talking about for quite a while now, a lot about what influencers are and what effect they're having on culture, and in specific mom culture. And it feels like this industry isn't going away, and it's something that we need to learn to swim in the water. And we need to learn how to think critically about it, because I think if we're not careful, it can feel like, well, if I just look like her and I be like her and I do like her and I buy all the things she tells me to buy, then I'll be happy like her. I'll be successful like her. I'll be beautiful like her. I'll be good at motherhood like her. And I won't feel the guilt anymore. So that's what we want to talk about today a little bit, is what, how to swim in the water of mom culture.
Yeah. So now let's think back to the quiz we did at the beginning, right? Because when we are saying, hey, does anybody in here feel guilty? Does anybody in here feel tired? We're all raising our hands. We want to a little bit make that connection to this mom influencer culture and say, hey, maybe there's something there. So we're going to talk a little bit about the good things that mom influencer culture may be bringing into our lives. And one of those things is just, at its best, we think there could be kind of a Titus 2 experience on there, where I know I have learned from other godly, wise women online.
Yeah, certainly this is something that, where we were talking about Risen Motherhood hopes to emulate at some level. Of course, it can't be the same thing. It's not the same as flesh and blood discipleship. But there are a lot of really wonderful women on there doing great work for the gospel. And it
showing how to like memorize scripture with your kids.
Yeah, how to have family devotions and like, I don't know, just all sorts of teaching you biblical theology, or teaching you how they fit their quiet time in, or just what their thoughts are about things. So there is certainly an element of, we can grow as a Christian by being edified by what other women are putting out there.
Sure. And we are also talking about just the common grace of, at the end of the day, we all need new recipes for what we're going to make for dinner, right? We do need bedding on our beds. Our kids do need, you know, pacifiers or swaddles or what those things are.
They got to show us how to do the taco move
on
the swaddle. You have to learn that as a new mom, you know, like really get those arms in there.
Or there are some things that are really helpful if you find somebody that goes on IGTV and they do a review of multiple products. Like, that kind of stuff is actually really, really helpful.
Yeah, it's kind of like this modern way that like women would have helped each other out at like the town
square.
Yeah, like
swapped tips.
Yeah, totally. Okay, another one is just inspiring us to like, I don't know, be amazed by what other moms can do, like a good kind of a comparison. And what we mean by that is just saying, wow, this woman is incredibly gifted and I can learn from her. I can watch her do art, or I can watch her as she makes this beautiful bread. We have a lot of friends who just do beautiful things, and we can appreciate and admire God's good gifts in other moms and say, I'm glad I'm gifted my ways, and I'm really glad they're gifted their ways. And also, I think that there are times where I've been so inspired by just the generosity in people's good hearts, like just a common grace in people where they do good things, right? You see people where there's like these good memes or like funny little things that people will share.
Oh, the memes in the last year.
Humanity's hilarious. I just. So there's just some hope that can be on social media that people can share, and we want to recognize that.
Another thing that Laura and I have just personally experienced is the beauty of finding some community online, maybe for something significant or special or unique that you're going through, that there's someone perhaps not in your real life that's experienced that you can talk to. Maybe it's miscarriage, maybe it's a long season of infertility, or having a child with special needs. All those different things. I mean, what a gift that we can go online and hear somebody share their story and then be able to DM them or connect with them and realize that we're not alone.
So now that we talked about some of the good things, we're going to talk about some of the bad things to be aware of. And this, we admit, is really looking at things kind of at its worst, or with kind of the most uncharitable lens. And everything can kind of be viewed two ways. We want to recognize that. But I think first, when we're thinking about that authentic, relatable mom that we're following, I don't know if you have ever been flipping through reels and you see a mom who's like, there's something super relatable that they're going to talk about, right? Like something like they've got to start making dinner for their kids, and they've been kind of laying down and they're going to make dinner for their kids. And then the next thing you know, they're like a rage monster or something, you know, or like they're passed out on the couch, or like they're, it's supposed to be funny, but you're kind of like, ooh, you know, like, oh my goodness, like it's normalizing sin, or it's normalizing a bad attitude or a hopelessness in motherhood. And what's meant to make us laugh and feel identified with suddenly becomes like, I don't know, like maybe you can laugh at one or two and then you keep going and you realize this isn't so fun anymore.
Mm-hmm. And I think on the flip side of that, that perfect mom image we were talking about, right, where they're lined up in front of the garage door and they're all matching, even if their messages and their captions aren't explicitly saying, hey, you need to do this. Hey, you need to be like me. What's implied is, ooh, I do. There's something wrong about me because I can't get my kids to line up like that. And I can't get my kid out of their costume to go to the grocery store. So I don't know.
Costumes forever.
Is that
grocery
okay?
Store.
That's
just
okay, right?
There's bigger battles in life.
But what it does is it makes us think like maybe the answer to my hopelessness, again, is to purchase her life and to try to be more like that. Or maybe to be relevant, I actually need to start my own account and I need to start posting things like that. So it can kind of have that reverse effect.
And another one is it can cause confusion of what it means to be a Christian mom. So a lot of moms that we see online might have Jesus in their bio, or they might talk about Christian things. And I think we naturally gravitate. We're like, oh, she's a Christian. Like, we always kind of want to claim them, you know. And there is an element where sometimes they also have other things that they're promoting. And this is probably, again,
yeah, like, they're just like living out their
not
life.
Meaning
it's
to.
Their niche. It's their passion.
There's like this extra, it's like Jesus plus, you know, Jesus plus homesteading, Jesus plus chicken coops, Jesus plus politics, Jesus plus therapy, whatever it is, tacos, I don't know. But you kind of feel like there's that to be a good Christian mom, I've got to be a believer. And then I've also got to kind of have this pet side project hobby, this thing that I vote for, yeah. This way that I live my
or
life.
Her thing should be my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just being careful about where you get your theology from. We're going to talk about this a little bit, but just this idea that like, if you're listening to somebody who you've been following, you know, for a year, for 3 minutes a day, think about how much that can actually affect you. And if you're listening to her more than your pastor of 10 years, there's a question there.
Yeah.
Where you're getting your theology.
Another thing we've seen is just, again, looking at it from a more critical eye is a lot of us raising our hands when we're feeling guilty and tired. That can be a moment when somebody who's selling a product can capitalize on that moment. Somebody who has a hot take or a harsh word that kind of confirms what you're feeling in that moment, they may leverage that feeling that you have because they know you're going to share that. And actually what that does is it elevates their platform. It allows them to get more followers. And they know that if they post that thing that resonates with you when you're in that tired, hopeless moment, that they're actually going to grow. So we have to be careful that we're not, you know, signing up for something in a moment when somebody's actually maybe kind of preying on us and capitalizing on that.
Yeah, Emma and I have said before, like, we'll buy anything to make motherhood easier, you know? And but that can be a very real feeling that if we're told that, we might in a weak moment capitalize on. So, and the last one is just this idea that there are very real connections, and there are studies being published now, because social media's been around finally long enough for us to know that it can cause anxiety, it can cause depression, it can cause mental illnesses. And so being on the apps more and more and engaging with these influencers, especially when we're comparing ourselves, there are studies being done where it's like the comparison affects the ways women mother and the way they see their motherhood. And so even kind of secular culture is seeing the same things that we're seeing as believers.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we've looked at that. We're all feeling rather down,
super
way
depressed.
Down right now. But we want to, of course, go back to the Bible. We want to go back to the Word of God. I had a chance to catch Mary's session last night and just listening to her talk about where do we get wisdom from and how are we going to be steadfast in the time that we live in? How are we going to endure to the end? We're going to go back to the Word of God and see what He says. And so as we're looking at creation, I think one of the things we noticed is we were created to be influenced. And we were created to influence others. So influence in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's actually wired into us. So if we think about, you know, Genesis 1 and 2, well, mankind was created in the image of God, right? To behold Him and to become like Him. So there's that vertical influence that's going on. God should be completely and totally and wholly and utterly in charge of everything we do. We should bring everything in line to what He says. And then there's that horizontal influence, right? We were designed to influence others. And I even love seeing this throughout all of Scripture. We were saying wisdom literature, wise people, spending time with wise, you know, spending time with wise people makes you more wise. Older women to younger women, parents to children. I love the picture of believers stirring one another up to love and good works, right? Because we encourage one another, we influence one another to follow Christ. So it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, but your sin is. So Genesis 3, one chapter further, I mean, it's interesting to think about Eve totally and wholly being influenced by God. And then one new influence enters the garden and she's like, yep, going to listen to you, you know? And then she's like, and I'm going to tell my man about it. And so she influences then Adam, and that sets a pattern for all of creation. And I think when we think about, especially our unregenerate selves, when we're looking for influence, we actually are totally rejecting God's influence. And we're saying, well, culture tells us, hey, you be influential to yourself. You know, you live your truth. You be unleash the inner goddess. You be you. Aspire to what you want to be and influence yourselves toward whatever it is you want, which is, can be really unclear. But
yeah, like manifest your, I don't know all the words, but there's something about manifesting.
That is a key word. But then what's funny about us is because we're so easily influenced, we're still looking for someone to tell us what to do. And some of us more show it more than others, kind of based on personality types, but we're really willing to follow anybody who's offering anything. And so very quickly, our let me influence myself breaks down. And as even somebody who follows Jesus, what happens to us is I think we kind of forget that. Or we start looking for what's easy. We don't really like what the answer is for what it looks like to follow Jesus in the long term and be influenced by him, which is the slow plod of daily obedience, right? It's being faithful in the everyday. It's slowly growing in him, and we're looking for something quick, something to make us feel better right now, something to help us feel valuable right now, or to get rid of those feelings. And so that's where we need the hope of the gospel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, you know, the redemption part, Jesus redeems influence, and he allows us to then influence others, you know, for the kingdom, which is really, really great. And what we just loved looking about and thinking about is what kind of influencer Jesus really was. You know, he's the most influential man of all time. And you know, everybody knows his name.
I mean, think about that. People, like everyone, like you say, Jesus, everyone know his name, know where to find his story. They probably know a little bit about his life. He's the most influential man, whether you think he's Lord or not.
Yeah, a lot of people know him. But yet he didn't follow the traditional rules of becoming an influencer, right? We actually know from Isaiah that he wasn't particularly attractive for a human. He didn't, when there was crowds around him, there was times when he rejected fame, where he turned away from the crowds. We know that there was many situations where he was the one who should have been served. And instead, what did he do? He flipped and he served. He was humble and quiet. He only came into public ministry when his father said that it was time. There was also just so many ways he didn't show off his power and his might. He did only the things that the Father asked him to do. There were some things, miracles he didn't complete, or some towns that he left when the Lord said it was time. But we also know that he lived kind of countercultural to numerical formulas. And so instead of kind of coming up the ranks and networking, who did Jesus decide to invest in? He gets 12 people around him that the world would not have said were impressive or helpful for his career, his ministry career. Excuse me. And then it's really interesting to see him, even who does he spend time with? Who does he go to? People with disabilities? People who are poor? People who need to be healed? Sinners? These people were not helping him. In fact, they were probably like
hurting his image.
They were hurting his reputation. And it's just really, really incredible. And then what does he do at the pinnacle of his influence? He dies. That is just so, so counter. And as we were thinking about the redemption, going back to, again, that vertical piece and that horizontal piece, Jesus is the image of the invisible God. He is perfectly influenced by the Father, and he redeems that horizontal influence. And I just love looking at his example, you know, Philippians 2. Though he was in the form of God, he did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but he emptied himself by taking the form of a servant. And we know he goes all the way to the cross. And in Romans 5:7, talking about one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person, one would dare even die. But God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So we see redeemed influence is service. It's death. It's obedience. And that's really counter.
Yeah, it makes... We were talking a little bit about Zacchaeus, and a lot of us probably sing this song to our kiddos and think of this as maybe a kid's story, but it's actually a really beautiful picture of what it looks like when your life has been transformed by Jesus Christ and you have been influenced by him. And so if you're not familiar with Zacchaeus, he is a man who was a wealthy tax collector, and he had been cheating people out of their money, been upcharging them a ton of money. He had not been honest with them, and people really didn't like him. He was not a cool dude. And Jesus comes, and you know, I feel like I'm going to start singing the song, but he comes, and he says, Zacchaeus, you come down. Oh, man.
Or I'm going to your house.
Yeah, yeah. He goes to his house, and Jesus transforms his life. And Zacchaeus says, Lord, I'm going to give back everything that I have taken from the poor, and I'm going to give back four times. And that is a life that has changed from an influence of greed and selfishness and all about himself to a life that has been completely influenced by Jesus. And so it is amazing what can happen when our desires and our life is put under the influence of the right person. The rightful king has our allegiance, and that it transforms everything, and even the way that we deal with mom culture.
Yeah, okay. So just kind of tying this back in, you know, giving that flyover of what the gospel really says about influence and its purpose in our lives, we were thinking, like, once Jesus becomes that primary main influence in our lives, once we've given him everything, everything else can take its proper place. The verse that always comes to mind for me is that 2 Corinthians 6:12, where Paul's talking about, hey, all things are lawful for me, but not everything is helpful. And that he doesn't want to be dominated by anything or enslaved by anything. And so I think in that mindset, we can follow people online and learn how to raise chickens if we want to, or learn how to bake bread, or find some jeans off of social media. But it doesn't have to dominate us. It doesn't have to be something that we're enslaved to. And there's a real big difference there.
Yeah, it's reminds me of Tim Keller's book, Freedom of Self-Forgetfulness. We just did this as the RM read a couple months ago. And he says, it's not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. And so perhaps when we apply that to influencers, it's not thinking less of influencers, it's thinking of influencers less. They tend to dominate our conversations. They become our new celebrity, right? We were talking about Jennifer Aniston and J-Lo and Princess Di and all the people that maybe our moms looked up to. And now we're kind of talking about the other influencers that we follow. But I think it's just thinking of them less and letting them have less influence on our lives. And often, you guys, if you're longtime listeners of Risen Motherhood, you might have heard this analogy before. But I think often of social media as a shopping mall. And
Laura, what is a shopping mall?
It's been years since some of you guys have gone. Oh my goodness.
Especially with COVID.
Well, that was the thing, is I entered this shopping mall, which I had not been in one for many, many years. And I remember walking out of it and just feeling really gross and feeling kind of like, ugh, like all of a sudden I want all this stuff. And I didn't realize there were so many cool pairs of shoes on the market. I didn't realize like lotion, you know, came in these cool bottles and now I need it. And what was funny is that I, you know, Emily says to me sometimes, like when we're talking about social media, she's like, gird your loins, you know, to get onto social media. I know it's always hilarious, I promise. And what's funny is that when we go into a mall, we should not be surprised if we want to buy things, right? And I was like shocked. And it was funny because you think about a mall and it's dark, there's no windows, right? You can't tell what time of day it is. There's food courts so you can survive all day in there. There's entertainment if you need a break. There's signs everywhere. You know, telling you these are the sales, these are the deals that you can get. There's a salesperson saying, do you need anything? Can I help you? And it's totally okay to go to a shopping mall, right? We want to say it's wrong to go to a shopping mall, but it's kind of on us if we're like, man, why do I feel so much greed right now? Or why do I feel so much like jealousy or covetousness? Or suddenly I want all these things and I'm so shocked by it. It's kind of like, well, you went to the mall, you know, like, duh. And so I think there's an element of when we're on social media and we start to feel those feelings, so many of us have treated it in a way that we're kind of like, oh my goodness, like I feel like kind of some of these feelings of dissension in my heart. Well, really, we need to be prepared for that. That's what it means to get on social media, is that we are at risk for war every time we get on there.
Yeah, we've also talked a little bit about the analogy of social media is a great tool, but it's not a toy. I think sometimes because it's just available at our fingertips and it feels so benign and it's so glowy and pretty.
It's this little teddy bear.
Yeah, it's and it gives, you know, it gives you the dopamine hit. You just think it's just totally neutral, but it's really not. It really can be hurtful if we're not using it correctly, a little bit, you know, like a knife in the kitchen. It's great for slicing those veggies, but you don't want to be flinging it around, you know. That's not safe. You need to know how to use it and be aware that you have something sharp and this could cut you if you're not careful. So just on a practical note, when we're talking about mom influencers and wanting to be under the right influence and then using our influence well, yeah, it might be wise for us to take breaks from social media regularly. It might be wise for us to set limits on our phone so that we don't always have free access to it. Or I've heard of some people, you know, putting their social media apps in like a little group that's, you know, harder to get to, or deleting their apps for the weekend. There's all kinds of tips you can do. But sometimes that can help us step back a little bit and say, wait, how are these things influencing me? And am I really turning to the right influences? Because I think one of the things I've noticed is that the more time we spend on social media, sometimes it can dull our affections for something else. Like we realize we're sitting in church on Sunday and it's like, why is the sermon starting to kind of sound boring to me? Or why is my Bible reading just kind of like, well, you know, actually our brains get rewired when we are spending a ton of time on a screen. And so we need to break that cycle and retrain our appetites to long for spiritual things.
Well, yeah, it brings me back to my mall analogy, because this idea that I didn't realize what those feelings were until I got out of the mall and into the sunshine. And I was like talking with my husband about it, and I was like, I just feel so angsty right now. And I wasn't recognizing where those feelings were coming from until I got out of there and kind of could breathe some fresh air. And I tell you, I think one of the best things that I consistently try to do for my social media intake is to not be afraid to hit unfollow and not be afraid to hit mute. I think we feel this FOMO, like I won't know what's going on, or this is where I get my primary news, or this is where I find out what's going on in culture, or this is where I keep up with my favorite, you know, mom influencers, and I won't know what's going on in her life. And that they'll still be there when you get back. And I always, I followed a whole bunch of interior designers when I was working on my house. I love following designers. I love interior design. And there was just so many, and I realized, like, I'd built my house, and I was like, man, I want to build again, you know, because I saw all these new things. I just got done with my house, and I wanted to build again, and I realized I got to unfollow these people, but I was afraid to unfollow them because I thought, well, then I won't know how to find them again, and then whenever I do someday get to build, like, how will I ever know? And it's like, okay, if the Lord wants you to find them, he'll help you find them, you know, by the power of the Spirit, it'll be okay. And so I think, though, that it's okay for us to just say, I'm going to be ruthless with my unfollows and my mutes. And if someone is not serving you, even if that was Risen Motherhood in a season, it is really okay to say, I'm out.
Right. And always, I think, as we're turning away from something, it's helpful to know, what should we be turning into? What should we be spending our time doing? And I know that this is the pat answer. This is the answer we always give, but it is the answer. We've got to be spending time in the Word. We need to be spending time in prayer. You know, some of us, I think, especially in the last year with everything with the pandemic, potentially are listening more closely to somebody's theology on social media, or will change an opinion on a dime, even though maybe our pastor for, again, the last 10, 20 years is saying something different. Why is that? I think we have to ask ourselves that question and say, are we really developing that local church community and investing in those relationships, spending time in our real lives? You know, we're not digital people. God didn't like wire us into the matrix or whatever. He made us with bodies that are meant to go outside and, you know, play with our kids and all of those different things. And it's important that we spend, not just stop social media, but spend some time on the right things.
Yeah, if you think of your life like a little food pyramid, social media should be like a donut.
And I do like donuts.
We like donuts. Yeah, we got to have donuts. But it should be like tiny, you know, like small. Okay. What's next?
Okay, so all of this. So we're moms living in a digital age. We're under the influence. This mom culture is not going away. But what does that mean about our daily faithfulness? Laura.
Ooh, okay, I can
answer
this.
Lobbing it back to you.
All right. Well, I think it's funny because we all have influence, right? And we like to say influencers has become this Is it a noun? You know, it's become this thing, this type of person. And I think that's true and it's very real. But also, we all have influence in our lives. And like we talked about throughout the gospel, it's like we're all called to have influence. And so we need to be thinking and cultivating our own influence and considering how is that affecting other people? What am I drawing them to? What am I showing them? Am I pointing them to mom influencer culture and showing them that that's where their hope is? Is that what my conversations revolve around? Or am I pointing my friends to Jesus? And so we can ask ourselves that question of just what is our own faithfulness and influence look like?
One of the things Laura and I heard recently that just really, really ministered to us was this idea of you don't know what God is going to bless. You don't know what kind of influence or what conversation it's going to be. And I think we're going to get to heaven someday, and it's going to be maybe the opposite of what we thought. And there's going to be a lot of women and moms who have this incredible fruitfulness, and they did not have hundreds of thousands of followers online. And so we need to be really, really careful as we're thinking about eternity and even as our own lives. You know, Laura and I, again, we're on social media, but I don't know if it's the thing that I wrote and posted on Risen Motherhood or the thing I recorded for the podcast or the thing I said at 7 a.m. to my child who was tired and frustrated. And I don't get to decide that. The Lord does. So both of those situations can be treated with faithfulness and given to the Lord. I think there's just a lot of hope in us being able to just do what the Lord has placed in front of us that day. Influence somebody who's maybe not going to help us network, or they're not going to follow us online. They're not going to help share our posts, but we're still called to love them and serve them. And then we let the Lord determine how he's going to use that.
Amen. That was great. Yeah. So we just want to close with encouraging you guys to really consider your feed, consider who those mom influencers are in your lives, and considering that influence that you do have and how you're pointing people to Jesus. And I love what you said, Em, because I think that's something you and I talk about all the time is it is an upside down kingdom, and it's not going to be what we expect, I think.
Yeah, maybe it's not how can I be like the influencer, but
how can I be faithful?
Ooh, that's good.
Oh, that was good. Okay.
Thanks. Thanks, guys.
Hi, I'm Laurel Green, and I'm a part of the Risen Motherhood community because I love the encouragement that I get from the speakers every single week, and it is just so great to be able to wake up in the morning and hear about God's word and know that I'm not alone in this journey of motherhood. So I'm just really thankful for this community of mothers.
Risen Motherhood is a nonprofit organization made possible by our generous donors for women just like you. If you'd like to support the ministry, please go to risenmotherhood.com/give.